You've heard of BetaShares. You've probably seen the logo on our podcast. You might even be among their 1 million investors. So you can imagine that I'm delighted to say BetaShares is the official ETF partner of the Australian Finance Podcast. With nearly 100 exchange-traded funds, you can go to betashares.com.au and immerse yourself in ETFs and unique insights covering all of the sectors, themes, core and satellite positions you could want. Think cybersecurity through the HACK ETF, robotics and AI with the RBTZ ETF, and uranium with the URNM ETF. The list goes on. To explore the BetaShares ETF range, visit betashares.com.au, read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website, and consider if the fund is right for you. BetaShares Capital Limited is the issuer.
Is there a Spotify Wrapped for investing? If you want to invest in shares or ETFs, our friends at Perla are more than one step ahead of the curve. On average, people who use Perla invest $1,750 every month. That's what we want to see, proper dollar cost averaging. With automated investing tools making your life simple, Perla investors have well and truly mastered the art of investing small bits lots of times. So, if you're ready to start growing your net worth in 2024, follow the link in your Spotify or Apple Podcast player right now to discover how you can get started today.
Welcome to the Australian Finance Podcast.
I'm Kate Campbell.
And I'm Owen Rask.
And we're here to give you the tools and knowledge to invest both your time and money better.
If you're new, feel free to jump in with our Starter Pack series that aired in early 2022, or our Shares or ETF mini series.
We've got plenty to share with you in today's episode, but if you want to catch us on socials,
head to Rask Australia on Insta and Twitter.
I'm also found at Kate Campbell AUS on Insta.
And I'm Owen Rask AU on Insta.
Just beware of the fake accounts. We'll never DM you about trading strategies or crypto. And if it sounds a bit weird, it's probably not us.
And just one final heads up before we get into the show. This podcast contains general financial information only.
Karen, welcome back onto the Australian Finance Podcast today.
Thanks, Kate. Great to be here.
You are a money coach, wonderful person to talk to when it comes to emotions, behavior, why we do the things we do with money. You're a former financial advisor and you've been a guest on the Australian Finance Podcast many times before. So there's some fantastic episodes, especially one we did in January about having a money conversation with your partner and all of the challenges and opportunities that come with that discussion. So I'll link them in the show notes if you want to get a taste of Karen's work on the Finance Podcast before. But Karen, today we're going to talk about something a little bit different, managing our money, and the terms that we commonly talk about in this area are budgeting and cash flow. Now, I know you've got a bit of a gripe with the word budgeting. Why is that?
I do, Kate. The word budget, it doesn't scream fun or enjoyment. To me, it comes across as really limiting and restrictive. So I'm really mindful of the language that we use when we talk about our money and our finances. So I prefer the term spending plan. We're creating a plan for how we want to spend and save our money. I think that's just more empowering in a lighter way than calling it a budget.
Most of the personal finance literature you'll see online and books and websites, and even we've used the term budgeting quite a bit before. So why is talking about a spending plan so important, and why should people be listening to this conversation?
Well, I really believe when we're talking about a spending plan or a budget, we're talking about cash flow. And cash flow is really the lifeline or the life flow of our finances. Just like our body needs air to breathe in and breathe out, our financial health and vitality requires a strong cash flow. So that's why it's really important that we do focus on this area of our money.
So what does a spending plan look like in reality?
So it's essentially having a look at where you want your money to go. So you're really clear on the money coming in, and then making a plan for where you want it to go. So obviously there's certain areas, and I think when it comes to cash flow, there's three main sources for it. So one's to meet our current financial obligations, and they might be things like if we've got a mortgage or we've got rent, maybe we've got like a phone plan. So we've got responsibilities and financial obligations. So one part of our cash flow is going towards that. The second part of our cash flow is around enjoying life. So making sure that we've got money to live the life that we want to live. And then the next part of that is about building wealth for our future. So putting away for investing or our superannuation or future goals that we have. So I think they're the really big three elements: meeting our current financial obligations that we're locked into, having some enjoyment, supporting a life that we want to lead, but also putting away for our future.
Those three elements you mentioned really tie into that definition of financial well-being and where we sit financially and how comfortable we are, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why a cash flow or a spending plan is so important for financial well-being, to actually be really mindful and make a plan and be intentional about giving our money a direction and a focus is really important.
So if we're listening to this and we want to get a bit more focus with our money, we roughly know how much is coming in each month. Maybe we have a general idea of how much we're spending each month, but we're not really sure where it's all getting allocated. How do we go about building a spending plan for ourselves?
So the first step to take is actually review where you've been spending your money.
The hard part.
The hard part. So I call it the harsh financial truth. Because a lot of people that I speak to, they're like, Karen, I don't know where my money goes. It just goes. So I was like, all right, well, let's actually find out and answer that question. Where does your money go? So an exercise that I get clients do before they actually create a spending plan of where they want their money to go, well, let's see where it's gone in the past. And that gives us a lot of insight and information. So the best way to do that is to go onto your online banking and having a look through your bank accounts through the transaction history. So we're so fortunate these days with all of the technology on our online banking, we can just go to our main transaction account and maybe have two or three of those transaction accounts. But say we've got one transaction account where all of the money comes in and out of, you go into the transaction history and you can put a date range on. So I highly recommend looking at 4 months or 6 months of your previous transactions. And then you can download that really simply into a CSV or spreadsheet. And then once you've downloaded all that data into a spreadsheet, if you're capable and competent with Excel, you can put some filters across the top row and then you can start to categorize all of your spending data. Some of the banks will actually do that for you and categorize some of those areas. So say, for instance, they see Woolworths or Aldi or Coles on there, they might categorize that as groceries or shopping. So if they've done that, that's wonderful. If not, you can create those filters and spending categories yourself. So you've got all the data there, you're sorting and filtering. And if we take the groceries, for example, you then categorize it into your groceries. And then say you've got 4 months worth of data, you add up all of those transactions every time you've shopped at those supermarkets. And then if you've taken 4 months, you divide that total amount by 4 months, and then that'll give you an average monthly amount. And then that's where you start to look at, well, this is how much per month on average I've been spending on clothes or shopping or utilities. And you want to categorize it into all those different spending categories.
Is the reason you want to average it out because so many times we have one-off expenses and we can look at them and go, oh, that was just something I had to spend during March. I don't normally have to spend that. But then every month we have a one-off expense in our groceries or our shopping column and we can very easily discount them.
Absolutely. We are wanting to capture more of the financial picture of where we're truly spending our money. And so the longer that you can go out, 6 months is ideal. I'm conscious that depending on how many transactions you have, that can be quite a lot of data to download. So 4 months is fine too. But yeah, we're wanting to smooth out those different, you know, sometimes we have expenses that are quarterly. So I have quarterly rates that come through. So I want to be able to capture those infrequent expenses and spending items as well.
Okay, so doing it over at least 3 months picks up on those quarterly charges. I guess you just have to be mindful if there's big things that pop up, like, I don't know, people pay car insurance. I don't have a car, but I know that is something all my friends complain about. That might be once a year, so you might have to look at how you can pick that up in your average spending as well.
Yeah, that's right. I highly recommend making a list of all of those one-off annual expenses, and you can create a calendar. So I know that my car registration falls in September, so it's about, I can plan for that. So if I'm not capturing that in the 4 months that I'm looking at in September, I'm going to still factor that in there as well. So, yeah, create a calendar of those big lumpy expenses that you have.
Yeah. And there's so many good tools now that help you categorize this stuff as well. So if you don't want to do the old school download the transaction spreadsheet method, and even like my bank personally will show me how much I've spent this month and how it compares to last month. And it will also try and categorize as much as it can. Often if I buy from a small cafe, it sometimes gets confused, or if I go to the market, it doesn't quite know how to categorize it, but then I can change the category. And then what I do just like at the end of each month is I just review if everything's categorized correctly, and then I can get a rough pulse check of where I've spent my money during the month.
Yeah, absolutely. You raise a really good point. So the example I use was using a spreadsheet. Not everyone loves spreadsheets. So there's a couple of other methods as well. You can use those apps. Pretty much all of the banks have their own cash flow or budget app. So you can download that and have it linked into your account. There's also others that are non-bank, like Canstar and Frollo have budgeting apps there as well. So that's one other option. And then the third option is very old school, Kate. It's going and downloading your transactions statements onto paper and then getting a couple of highlighter pens. So you can have a couple of different colours for different spending categories and add it up manually using pen and paper. So some people really like that option as well. So you've got those three options. There's no right or wrong way. It's about what works for you, because we're all individual and different, and I've got different ways of wanting to get the same outcome.
So once we've got this knowledge, however we've come to this point, and we know what our average monthly spending is in all the different areas of our lives, what can we do with that information to inform our spending plan and our financial goals moving forward?
Yeah, so the first is about having an awareness. So when people go through this exercise, it's almost kind of like, wow, I've got some transparency now on where that money's going. And then you can make a really informed decision about, is that where I want my money to go? So I've got an example that I love to share all the time. Someone that I helped do one of these for, she discovered that she was spending $240 a month on coffee. And I don't deprive anyone of drinking coffee, but she said to me, Karen, I don't even like coffee. I just go and get the coffee because everyone at work, we take a morning tea break, we go down to the cafe and we order coffee. And I said, and she said, I'm spending $240 a month. I had no idea. And she had a goal that she wanted to purchase a home. So now with that information, she can say, well, that $240 a month, is that better off going towards putting for a house deposit? And I can just make a cup of tea and use a takeaway cup and just walk down in the elevator with them and just sit and have my cup of tea that I actually prefer to coffee. So having that information of going through where you're currently spending, you now have an awareness and you're conscious about where your money has been going. Because quite often when it comes to money, we're just very habitual. We just operate on autopilot, just like we don't think about breathing. Quite often we don't think about where we spend our money. So it's giving us that clarity. And then from that, you can look at all of those spending items and say, actually, I don't want to, going forward, spend that money in that area. I do want to spend it in a different spending category, mm-hmm. or maybe put it away for savings. So you then are going through and making a plan, a really conscious, intentional plan about this is where I want that $240 a month to go now rather than here.
Yeah, it's interesting because that $250 on coffee a month, I can really see how that happens in the city when people are going and getting coffee in the morning and then at lunchtime with colleagues and on the weekend with friends. But you can also see that cost, whatever it is, if it's a discretionary cost, as an opportunity. So sure, you've spent that each month in the past, but you have the opportunity now to reduce that amount and put it towards another goal. So instead of going, oh, I really regret that I've done that, you can say, well, it's actually an opportunity to save money and put it towards my investments or my Europe holiday next year.
Absolutely. And sometimes I think when we go through this exercise and add up where we have been spending our money, sometimes we just need to be kind and forgive ourselves. It's like, okay, that was what I was doing in the past. It's going to be different going forward. So we're talking about discretionary expenses. We also want to have that same filter with our fixed responsibilities. So having a look at things like, am I on the best phone plan? am I on the best internet plan, and having a look at, I much prefer to cut expenses and be completely ruthless in those areas that don't actually bring me joy and don't impact my day to day. So I'm not telling anyone that's listening to stop coffee, drinking coffee or buying coffee. So it's, you know, whatever your coffee item is.
Yes. Well, within listeners of the Australian Finance Podcast, when I was surveying them last year, Karen, a lot of people said it was the coffee in the morning, the coffee machine, the coffee with friends on the weekend that brought them the most sort of low-cost joy in their day. So I think we should keep the coffees, but maybe find a way to make sure it's sustainable long-term and maybe make sure you have room in your budget for it, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest one, that sneaky assassin that I see, is the Big W purchase or the Kmart purchase. You know, it's like, you know, I don't shop at David Jones or, you know, high-end places. I shop at Kmart and Target. But when you're walking out with a trolley full of stuff for a couple of $100, that they're the things that can really impact as well. So just buying that extra book or toy for the kids or a pair of slippers that you don't really essentially need.
Yeah. So now we know our overall spending plan and what's coming in and how we might want to make some adjustments this month. How do you suggest to your clients that they structure their income and some of their savings accounts and things like that?
I'm a big fan of the 50-30-20 model. So 50% on those fixed costs and those things that we've got those obligations to and essential living costs, 30% to the discretionary stuff, a little more of that fun lifestyle stuff, and then 20% for wealth accumulation. And that might be around paying down non-deductible debt. It might be putting some money into a superannuation, or it might be setting up an emergency account or putting money into shares or other investments. So 50% on fixed, 30% on discretionary, and 20% on that the financial future side of things. So having those three categories and having a look at where it's gone before and then how we can change it. I'm very conscious that some people might have really high fixed costs, so they might be more at 60% or 65%. And then it's about, well, how do we allocate for the other two components? So it's really important that going forward you do have those three categories, the fixed, the flexible, and the future ones.
Mm. I like those ideas of the three buckets, because as soon as you tell someone a percentage like 50, 30, 20, they'll go, that doesn't work for me because of X, Y, Z. But if you think of it as just, these are three buckets and based off where you are right now, you can allocate the percentages accordingly. And then maybe over time you can start to put a bit more aside into the future you bucket. Maybe it's only 1% of your total income today, but maybe you can bring it up to 5% by the end of the year by making some changes to your spending plan.
Absolutely. I completely agree. So it's just what works for you and where you are at the moment. And so when we think about those buckets, you can think of those buckets as accounts. So you could, I'm a big fan of automating. So once you work out what those numbers are for you, it's about allocating those into, you could have those three bank accounts, one for the fixed, one for the flexible, one for the future.
Mm. And then you know you've got the money for your fixed expenses put aside every month and you don't have to worry about there not being enough to cover those bills that are coming out. How do our goals play into this spending breakdown?
So I think our goals and our values are extremely important, because when we are making harder financial decisions about, okay, I'm not going to be spending money on this, I'm going to be saving it here, our goals are what give us that motivation and that drive to do that. So it's really important that you understand what's your wealthy life. So what does, you know, feeling wealthy look like for you, and aligning yourself with that. So for me, Kate, having fresh flowers in a vase is my wealthy life. I feel very abundant when I've got fresh flowers in a vase. So I know that that cost me $34 a fortnight. They like typically last a fortnight. So in my spending plan, I've got $70 a month for flowers. And so it's about each individual working out what are those 5 to 10 things that make you feel like you're living a wealthy life. And that might be something really small like that coffee, or it might be, you know, having time to go out in nature or buying a book or reading. So it's about, making sure that you're still getting enjoyment out of life as well. So you've got those that list of, you know, what does a wealthy life look like to me? What are some of those small things that give me pleasure? And then we want to also have our goals, and that might be a 12-month goal that you want to save for an emergency account or put away for a holiday. And then you want to have 3 to 5 year goals, so more of those medium-term goals, and then your longer-term goals. Because having those goals, Kate, means that when you go to make a financial decision, and we make several financial decisions every day when we're spending our money or not spending our money, you can now ask yourself, is that X that I'm about to buy taking me closer to my goal or further away from my goal? But if you don't have that goal or direction, then it makes it a lot easier to just, well, I'll just do this because that's kind of living for today.
Yeah. I love the concept of adding into your budget or spending plan, we're going to call it, the things that really bring you joy, and actually writing it as a line item and allowing yourself to spend with happiness the money on the flowers each month. For me, it's maybe having $100 put aside each month to buy books without having to worry about the fact that I'm spending $100 a month on books, and maybe I could allocate that to my investments instead, because that is something that really makes me happy, not having to think about whether it's in my plan this month or not. I can just go in and buy a book when I see something that really interests me. And for someone else, they might go, why are you spending $1,200 a year on books? That's a complete waste of money. And that's because that's not within their value set. They might value convenience, or they might value travel a lot more than me. And so it's quite interesting, because often when people tell us, why are you spending money there? It's because it's not what they value. But if you spend time working out what's important to you and what you value and what your goals are, then you can actually put that into your spending plan intentionally.
Absolutely. So if we kind of look at an order for these things, Kate, the first one is knowing what your values are. What are the five most important things to you? Maybe it's health and vitality. Maybe it's connection and family time. Maybe it's personal growth and learning and books. So understand what your values are, then set your goals to that, and then set part of your spending plan that you can actually purchase those things. Because that's really, really important.
Yeah. And because we will, what happens when we go off track with our spending plan? And maybe we had the best intentions at the start of the month, but something completely unexpected happens, or we just can't stick to it for some reason. Maybe we made it too challenging.
So I only think of it as a spending plan failure if you didn't learn something from it. So if you can say, like, all right, I spent too much in this area, or something came up, and you go back and understand, how did it come to be that way, and what would I do differently next month? So I think we really need to find out, what do we learn from that? What do we take away from that? And I think the problem is that when it comes to our finances, we overvalue maths and accounting and undervalue psychology. So what was that habit that we had that we weren't able to break, and then that set us back onto that same path of overspending in a certain area or not having enough coming in? So I really love the work of James Clear and habit stacking, and he's got some really great strategies. And so some of those things around creating an environment where it makes spending harder. So if you've got in your spending plan that you want to reduce the amount that you spend on clothes or shoes or whatever item it is, JB Hi-Fi, unsubscribe to their newsletters, because that's taking out that temptation and that focus there. And perhaps one of your spending plan fails was that the future account that you had, that you were going to be putting money away in there for a savings goal, and that one got blown up. Well, then it might be about having that money going into a different bank account with a different bank, and someone else has the net password code. So you can't even get into there to take that money out. So it's about setting an environment around us that makes whatever we failed on harder to do next month.
And that's such an important part of it. We can often say, I want to reduce my grocery bill by $200 this month. But if we don't change anything that we did the previous month, then it's going to be very hard to actually reduce it. And so this is something I've been working on this year, reducing cost of groceries, because they were just sort of getting out of control. And I was actually
changing my behavior. I was meal planning on the weekend. I was doing click and collect so that everything was sort of on track. I was going to farmer's market when I could get a more affordable produce, and maybe I was buying in bulk or thinking ahead and putting things on sale in the freezer for 2 weeks' time. So I changed a whole lot of my behaviors and what I was doing to actually reduce that grocery bill. And if I had just said, I want to cut my grocery bill by $200 this month, and I didn't do anything different, I probably would have spent exactly the same amount if I got to the end of the month.
Absolutely. So it all comes back to that psychology and our behaviors. And if we want to get a different outcome, we need to do things differently. So it's about, just like you had that strategy of, I'm going to do the meal planning, I'm going to click and collect and purchase online rather than going into the store. I'm going to eat a meal before I go into the store so I'm not hungry and just grabbing everything off the shelves. We need to have a look at whatever that habit is that we want to change, what new strategies and behaviors do we need to put in place.
Karen, what are some of the common trends that you're seeing in your client spending at the moment?
So the biggest expenses that I see by far are housing expenses. So that, whether that be paying off a mortgage or rental income. So they tend to be the highest ticket item. And ideally, as a benchmark, a couple of years ago, before we had the housing crisis and rents going up and mortgage repayments going up, 30% was like of your cash flow was the ideal number to have spending on rent or mortgage. But we're seeing this blow up way over 40% at the moment. So it's actually quite a significant amount of someone's expenditure is either mortgage repayments or rental repayments. So that's the biggest ticket item. The second biggest ticket item that I see is groceries. So how much people are spending on food. And if we think of a couple with a couple of children, so let's say a family of four, typically seeing around the $2,000 to $2,200 per month on groceries. So they're the biggest ticket items there. Then another thing that I find interesting that I see in expenses more around the discretionary side of things is streaming services. So typically, people have three streaming services of cash flows that I see. I have less. I have two myself. And I'm talking about the TV ones, and then other people have the Spotify ones too. Sometimes that's a conversation around if they've got pretty aggressive goals, or they're really focused and determined on, I want to achieve this goal in 12 months or 3 years' time, it might be a conversation that we have around, do you need five streaming services? And what are they costing you every month? Is there a way that we can streamline some of those?
Mm. It's interesting with those two bigger ticket items, the cost for living and the cost for groceries, which I guess is cost of living as well. They can be reduced, but only so far for most people. Most people do need a roof over their head and to eat something each month, unless maybe we're living in the off-grid in the outback. But these costs can only be reduced so far. So how do you sort of tackle those challenges?
So sometimes we look at being quite creative. So with the housing one, for example, maybe it's a couple or a single person and they've got a spare room. Mm. Would they be open to renting that room out for a period of time? It might be just for 12 months, just so perhaps they can tackle some of their debt or get their emergency savings account up and way. So that could be one way that they can look at doing that, or they can have a more drastic measurement by saying, okay, we're not going to renew the lease when it comes to you. We're actually going to move back in with a family member or someone else, just to really cut those costs for 12 months or something like that. But other than those options, there's not really much that people can do at the moment, unfortunately. Yeah, and then it's about cutting back in other areas.
It makes it really hard, especially if you had big savings goals and investing goals that you were working towards maybe 21, 22, and then suddenly grocery and living costs have risen so much that you're saving a lot less than you thought you would be.
Mm, that's right. And then so then I talk to people about, we can only cut so much. And if those costs are fixed, those costs are fixed. What are ways that we can look at the other side of the equation then of that spending plan? How can we generate more income? So then we've got more discretionary spending there that we can use, or we can use towards our goals. So that might be around leveraging assets that you've already got. It might be, putting your car on Car Next Door to rent it out. It could be things like selling some items that you're not using anymore, perhaps getting a casual job. So what are some other ways that you can increase your income if there's no way that you can decrease your expenses anymore?
Yeah, and that's tough, but sometimes it is the reality. If you do want to get ahead financially, you are going to have to make some really hard decisions with what you're doing and how you're earning money.
That's right. And then it's also about going back to your values, those things that are really important. And if I use your example of your allocation of money to books, maybe that is that thing that really brings someone joy. What are some other ways that you can read books or learn that doesn't have financial consequences? And that might be getting an online subscription where you've got like access to a lot more books and it's not costing as much, or maybe it's going to your local library and borrowing the books. So sometimes we can be really creative around still fulfilling those things that we love doing, but doesn't have the financial consequences that we had in the past with those.
Yeah. And how often should we be reviewing this whole thing now that we've got our spending plan, we've figured out what our buckets are and how much we're allocating, we've done some automation, we've set up our bank accounts. How often should we be checking in and adjusting the system we've created?
So when you're first starting out, if you're just doing this for the first time, I highly recommend checking in and reviewing monthly, just so you can see that it's on track, or maybe you need to do some adjustments to some of those different categories. And then when that's kind of working and automated quite well, you can move to quarterly check-ins. And then after a period of time of that going well, that might be 12 months that everything's going okay, then 6 monthly is really good. And then you can just download the 6 month transaction. I do mine every 6 months. Pretty much all of the time, I'll need to adjust some of those, more of those fixed costs, and making sure that I've got more going into those. Just with inflation and cost of living going up the last couple of years, I've found that I do have to adjust that amount.
Yeah, no, it is requiring more regular adjustments and more regular finding a better deal with a lot of those things you have to pay for. I mean, I just cut $20 off my monthly mobile phone plan just because I hadn't changed it for a while and the company had a more accessible plan that had a lot less gigabytes per month. But when I looked at what I was actually using per month, I did not need the crazy gigabyte plan. I could just have a very regular gigabyte plan because we have internet everywhere we go now that's often free. If I go to work or university, there's free internet. So I really didn't need the bigger plan. So that was one small change I could make. But over a year, suddenly it does free up more money for me to put aside for my savings goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is about looking at those things. So mobile plans and data are one thing that you can do. Another one is, if you've got private health cover, we've all just had those increases that went up in April. And so it's about doing an audit around, well, what have I or my family used from a healthcare perspective over the last 12 months? Do we need all of those optional extras, or perhaps we haven't had them and we're anticipating that we'll need some treatment in the next year or so, and adjusting accordingly? So it is as good an exercise to do an audit of your habits and behaviours as well, and what you'll kind of need and if you can change different plans accordingly to save some money.
And if we're thinking a little bit further ahead, and maybe we're wanting to plan our cash flow for the next few years and what it might look like with maybe a pay increase, do you have any tips for people who want to think about how they're going to reach a longer term goal?
I think it is important to, when we have those longer term goals, to chunk it down. So a 3-year goal might seem like a long way away, but how can you chunk it down into milestones to have a look at? Well, every quarter I need to be putting this much away into my bank account. And so just breaking it down into more bite-sizable goals. And I think it's also really important that you do have that line of sight. So just like we were talking about before, we can have those annual costs that come up. So we can have that line of sight and we can do it forward for 12 months, 2 years, 3 years. And just so there's no surprises, we know what's coming up. I think it's really helpful to have that longer term view as well.
If this topic has really piqued someone's interest and they want to learn more about their behaviors and values with money, they want to learn more about their spending and how they can allocate it in ways that align with what brings them joy and what their goals are. Do you have any resources, tools, books that you love sharing with people on this topic?
So one of my favorite books to help with cash flow and spending plans is Ramit Sethi's book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich, but the journal, not the actual book, the cover. And it goes through lots of different areas around looking at your values, setting your goals. What does your rich life look like? Really, really good book to start to really focus on where you want your cash flow to go. That's a great book, and it talks a lot about the psychology of money and habits that we have. So highly recommend that book. And also, I'm a really big fan of his work, and I love his Netflix show. I think it's that perfect combination of some really great information, but in an entertaining way as well. He's got some great strategies in there.
Yeah. He's also got a great podcast where he interviews couples to talk about their money and how they manage it together. So you get a behind the scenes look at how other people are doing it.
Yeah, that's right. And sometimes, we can tend to focus on, they've got their house, they're doing this, they're doing that. And we're looking at everyone else and comparing everyone else without actually looking underneath as to what's going on for them. Is it really stressful that they're having to pay for all of this? Is it all funded by debt? So we can look at other people and compare, but it's I think those shows are really helpful to say, well, actually, this is what's going on underneath the surface that we don't see. And then that can kind of create a more realistic benchmark for ourselves as well, to not be so hard on ourselves. So his book and Netflix show and the podcast are great resources. Have a look at your bank and what apps that you've got there available that you can link in to just help you be more mindful with your money. So it is about creating those habits and behaviours and doing it on a regular basis and being really consistent with checking in on your cash flow.
Now, Karen, from everything we've covered in today's conversation, if someone walked away with just one thing in their mind or one action, what would you want to leave them with?
So it would be about being aware, like rather than just operating on default and with cash being cardless. So we've either got a phone or, we're using a card and we're swiping. It's about rather than just doing that, as we make every financial decision, just ask yourself, is this purchase taking me closer towards my goals or further away? And just really being conscious and asking yourself that. So now that you've set your spending plan, you know what your goals are. Every time you make a financial decision and you'll do multiple ones of those every day, just ask yourself that question. Is this taking me closer towards my goals or further away?
I love that. Now, Karen, if people want to learn more about you or get in touch and learn about your money coaching services, where should they head to?
They can head to my website, which is womentalkingfinance.com.au. I do have a spending plan spreadsheet, if you do like spreadsheets and calculators, that you can download off my website there as well as lots of other blog articles to read more around the psychology and habits of money and spending.
Perfect. Well, if you want to hear more from Karen, we also have a few episodes in the back catalogue, so I'll link them in the show notes along with all the resources we talked about in today's episode. Karen, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
My absolute pleasure, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast. We hope you learned something new and were able to take one thing away from this episode.
If you're keen to learn more, head on over to Rask Education and take one of our free money and investing courses. You could even become a Rask Core member for less than your Netflix subscription each month. And don't forget to subscribe for new episodes in your inbox every week.
Plus, if you enjoyed the show, we'd love you to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and send any questions our way via the link in the description. And before we go on, did this podcast contain personal financial advice just for me?
Absolutely not, Kate. Our podcast actually contains general financial information only. What that means is the information does not take into account your financial needs, goals, objectives, or even your situation. So because of that, it's important that you consider if the information is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on it.
If that all sounds a bit confusing or you're still working out what your needs are, it's a great idea to consult a licensed and trusted financial planner. And don't forget to do your own research.
Are you thinking about starting your wealth creating journey, but not sure where to put your hard-earned dollars? InvestSmart can help. InvestSmart offers a free quiz that makes it easy to find the right InvestSmart ETF portfolio to help you reach your goals. Just visit investsmart.com.au and hit Get Started. Answer a few simple questions about your goals and how much you want to invest, and you'll get a tailored statement of advice with a portfolio recommendation. You can visit investsmart.com.au for a no obligations free statement of advice. This ad is brought to you by InvestSmart Advice, AFSL 334107. For more than a decade, I've been hunting for the best investors and their methods, strategies, and tools for investing. After years in the industry, countless books, a few degrees, and 1,000 podcasts and live shows, I've rolled this accumulated knowledge into something called Rask Invest. If you've ever heard me talk about a core and a satellite, active and passive, true long-term compounding, or you simply want to know exactly how I would invest, now is your chance. Rask Invest is our new investment service, designed for all types of investors who want professional management of their core portfolio at a low cost from a team they trust. Rask Invest helps you automate your wealth creation and passive income. Simply click the link that says Invest with Owen in your podcast player to join one of our live platform walkthroughs or book a call with us. You can also view the Rask Invest PDS and TMD and get invested with me.